James chapter 4. James is trying to resolve conflict. He's still in the process of trying to help us understand why is there discord and lack of harmony and lack of intimacy. You know, we tend to think of conflict and we tend to think of lack of harmony and discord is church that are people that are obviously fighting, people that are obviously not getting along, church breakups, separations. But I would contend that the vast majority of churches are not intimate, and people are not intimate, and the reason that there is because there's conflicts, and we don't even recognize it. Families are the same way. We talked about it a little bit last week about friendship. You know, friendship with the world is enmity or hostility towards God. And you know, one of the weaknesses with friendship is that we all of us probably have a fairly dim misunderstanding of friendship, and I would say that it's in the process of being diminished purposely. You know, I think the boy, when he created the iPhone, desired it to be your best friend. With the advancements, and it were there, it's a pretty amazing thing with the advancements in AI, with artificial intelligence. It's a very scary thing what people are going to perceive as friendship. Because already it's the... it's people's the last thing they want to talk to before they go to sleep, and the first thing they want to look at when they get up, and the immediate go-to when they're bored or something's there. I mean, it's like a best friend that you could have with you all the time. When AI comes up, it's going to be worse. And between that and the whole Facebook thing, we're pretty deceived. So intimacy is something that we are losing sight of. And we tend to think of intimacy and friendship as the lack of conflict. But I would contend that's not necessarily so. That there's correct conflict and there's wrong conflict. But there's absolutely the necessity of conflict if things are going to be healthy. So we get to these verses when he's talking about what it looks like to, you know, the first verse of the thing, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is it not the source of pleasures that wage war on your members? You know, one of the weaknesses that we have is in families, in the church, we tend to learn ways of socially dealing with things so that we get along and it works, our lives ordered are better for us, but in our hearts, we still have these things. The Bible's pretty clear that if there's envy and jealousy, and again, those seem like really strong words, but, you know, all of us have to struggle with them. Some of us learn better ways, some of us don't know how to keep our mouth shut, and some of us know how to keep our mouth shut. Doesn't necessarily mean that our hearts are better because you don't open your mouth. In fact, I would contend that maybe there's greater danger. Those who tend to be capable of having a heart that is judgmental towards people and yet doesn't speak it, because they're never corrected. You know, it's kind of like the child and that's the good kid. You know, it's all kids, all children need to learn to submit their wills to the authority over them, and that's a tough one. And the compliant kid is difficult, even more difficult at times. The kid that's outward and speaks, reacts, is pretty transparent, comes out, that's a lot easier to correct because you tend to see things that are wrong. And the kid that's compliant and knows how to survive that way, sometimes they don't get corrected, and I would contend that those people oftentimes as adults are some of the hardest hearted and most difficult to change. We get to verse 11, and here we are. in our culture, to me, one of the most, you know, I'm pretty somber and pretty sober about discussing this, because it's a scourge of the evangelical church, it's a scourge of our country, and we have bought into our social, you know, within the church, tolerant unity and perception of love, you know, are the highest virtues that we speak of, because we do in our society. And those aren't the highest virtues. And we tend to have very wrong views of, because love, we interpret again as being nice, right? Tolerance and getting along and unity. So, and we learn to create that behavior. That's to me why I put great weight on us all being in a position where we live our lives out, you know, where somebody's bumping into you with a cart in the grocery store, and what's Steve's response, you know? You know, I put a lot of stock and weight on doing life together, living out life together. Yeah, he told me about it, you know. And what's the scowl for? That was the exact look you probably gave him, you know, when he was doing it. So, yeah, no, you didn't know it was until you turned around and finally figured it out. So, but the issue is, it's important to do life together, because the reality comes out. We learn behavior and learn how to get along in a social setting, but how are we in the confines of our home? How are we the kids? You know, I've always said, I don't really need to hear you tell me about your relationship with God. Let me go spend a couple hours with your wife and kids, or those closest to you, and that'll tell me. You know, you don't need to. What you say isn't necessarily who you are. We come to this in their, you know, the most quoted verse in the Bible being, "Do not judge," and yet it is a absolute direct scheme straight from the pit of hell to misinterpret what Jesus said, and what Paul said, and what James says. We read verse 11 and 12. "Do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor?" Well, that seems pretty simple, doesn't it? You know, that sounds a lot like what Jesus said. Again, from what I understand, the most quoted verse in the Bible, and from what I would say on the street, the most quoted verse in the Bible these days. It certainly is not John 3:16 these days. These days it would be Matthew chapter 7, when Jesus was giving the Sermon on the Mount and speaking profound wisdom. I cannot say strongly enough the importance of understanding the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, as being what our lives are supposed to look like. Being what, living in this dispensation, and the dispensation of grace, and this period of time since Jesus' death, this is what our lives are to look like. And, you know, let me tell you what, that the Sermon on the Mount is degraded and put aside, and people say, well, that's what it'll be like in the millennium. Or, you know, but that's not what it's like now. You know, that's for another time. Or, you know, we even, without saying it because it's theologically correct, Jesus didn't really even mean all those things. I would contend that one of the most important, you know, here we have Jesus, who we regard and call the Son of the Living God, and we say that, therefore, he speaks truth, and he speaks all wisdom, and he knows all wisdom, and He is the only hope of salvation. And we have this dissertation in 5, 6, and 7 that is the longest contiguous sermon that he gave, and I mean, it was straight up, this is what it looks like, this is what it looks like. And we don't put it, the stock and importance in it. We should. In chapter 7, we twist it and turn it to make it fit us. It says, do not judge, lest you be judged yourselves. Right? Most quoted verse. Do not judge. Right? So what does that mean? Did he say that? Yeah, he said it. It's right there. Okay? What does that mean? What does that mean? Because that fits our culture very well. Right? Who are you to judge me? Who are you to say something to me? You know? Don't judge. That's what he says. From the way you judge, you will be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, then you will see clearly enough to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So what does judging not mean, I think is important, because we easily classify it as looking at somebody's behavior or actions or attitude or clothes or shoes or whatever it might be and making a critical statement about it. Right? And saying that something about it is not correct. We say, well, that's, you don't have a right to do that. Why do you have the right to do that? And it says, you know, who are you? You think you're perfect? You're not perfect. But yet I would contend that he does not, you know, he says it real plainly there. He says it real plainly in a lot of places. In fact, I would just read verse 6. It says, do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine. Lest they trample them under feet and churn and tear you to pieces. That's the next verse. To not give, is that a character judgment? Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not cast your pearls before swine. That's Jesus' statement. Same thing here, says, do not judge. In the Jewish culture, in the Eastern culture, there was no more critical or extreme judgment that you could make on somebody than calling them a dog or a swine. Right? And obviously, you're judging their character. Right? Jesus said to do that. Jesus says, judge their character and do not give what is holy to dogs. And do not cast your pearls before swine. So obviously, he does not, and there's a whole bunch more. The Bible is full of the necessity of discerning character. Okay? And the truth is, I mean, we tend to think, all right, well, how does that look? I don't know. Most of you in here can relate to being a parent. And all of you can, on some level, understand being a parent. How critical is it to discern the heart of your children? To judge the heart of your children? I would contend that if you don't do that, you're a wicked parent. You're not a good parent. We were just talking about it this morning with Ashley running up. She was listening to some of Driscoll's stuff doing it, and we're just watching the dynamic of Maya and Genesis, you know, and that, what do you call it? Trouble. Yeah. Frenemies or something, I think the word was said at one point, or something like that, you know. They can be best of friends, but they can be the worst of enemies doing it, you know, and there's this relentless conflict. If one of them has it, the other one has to have it, and that one has to share with them, and this one has to share with them. It doesn't matter what it is, at times it's just nuts and watching it, you know, and she was talking about Mark's thing, but it so often happens, a kid runs up and goes, they're not sharing with me. You know, how's a parent going to do? What's a parent need to do? You know, the kid comes up and says, they hit me, right? I mean, it's relentless. I have plenty of grandkids now, you know. They hit me. So, you know, the immediate, why do they do that? You know, is it critical that we discern their hearts? You know, usually it seems to me, and this maybe is an overstatement, but in thinking about it yesterday, as I was thinking about that, most of the time, they did something to cause it. The one that comes running and says, they hit me, usually took something from the other kid or did something towards them, but they're going to run until they hit me. Now, don't misunderstand. There is the responsibility. We try to train our kids, do not hit them back or do not strike out at them. You come and tell me if they do something wrong, right? Correct, right? And that would be the right teaching, that they are not supposed to enact vengeance or judgment on their sibling doing it, that they should come to a parent. But it doesn't seem like that's the case most of the time. You know, most of the time they're there to impugn the character of their sibling, you know, of saying that they were mean, they were bad, they were acting wrong. I was innocent. I didn't do anything and they hit me. And is to make themselves, exonerate themselves and make themselves look better in order to get away or strike out, or, you know, they want to see their kid. I mean, it's amazing. Kids want to see get their sibling in trouble. Then when the spanking comes, they're usually troubled by it. You know, I don't know any kid that sits through the spanking of their sibling and goes, yeah, I'm so glad you got it. They're kind of like, I caused doing it. There's a couple things at play there. And unfortunately, and it's important to look at them, because there is the judgment of the parent. The parent needs to not just look at the obvious, what was said or what the kid is responding to or acting. They need to judge the kid's heart. What's this kid doing? You know, what's this kid saying? How are they acting? And it's essential that you do. If you do not discern the heart of your children, you're going to be a terrible parent. If you just act on the obvious or what's in front of your face, spank accordingly or don't spank accordingly or resolve I don't know or whatever it might be, if you don't discern the heart of your children and correct behavior and discipline behavior according to their heart, you're going to fail your child miserably. So it's important. I wouldn't say it's important. I would say it's essential to discern the heart of your children, to judge the heart of your children. Is it right? Is it wrong? And it's amazing to me. Why do you do that? Why do you want to do that? You know, it's one thing if you're a daycare keeper that just is doing it because this is my job and I'm doing it and I'm sick of all these little kids and now what am I going to do? I'm stereotyping. I'm sure there's daycare people. I mean, you're a nanny and you care about the hearts of your kids and aren't just trying to function and survive doing it. I'm talking about a stereotypical, I'm just trying to survive, so I'm trying to teach social compliance. Sometimes all mothers do it too. Sometimes, you know, we're just trying to keep social justice. So, you know, you're not allowed to hit. You're not allowed to do this. This won't. And you put your rules up in order to function. But, you know, typically what you're doing is teaching compliance, not necessarily submission. We easily, if to the degree you do not teach submission of the will to the authority over them, you fail your children terribly. Teaching a kid to be compliant, and so we get along in the social behavior, is, that's in a sense easier to do, and there's a lot of ways to do it. Guilt, shame, rejection, you know, all kinds of things that, you know, go to your room, I don't want to be around you when you act like this, you know. All the things that we teach them, you know, that, or the statements that we make, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. You know, is that really a good statement to teach a child? You know? But yet, we grow up with that, and here we are as adults going by those same rules, right? If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all, right? If you know, because otherwise you're being judgmental. Otherwise you're being critical. If you're going to love your kid, you're going to, and it's the same thing. Our biggest issue within us is, do we care about others more than ourselves? And that's exactly what he's talking about here. The necessity of correcting bad behavior is essential. There's a couple things that I want to read. You know, one of them, in Titus, he's talking about qualifications for an elder, okay? And Paul is writing a letter to Titus and saying, you know, this is what an elder should look like, okay? It says, for this reason I left you in Crete, that you might set in order what remains, verse 5 of chapter 1, and appoint elders in every city as I directed you. Namely, if any man is above reproach, the husband of one wife, having children who believe, not accused of dissipation or rebellion, for the overseer must be above reproach as God's steward, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not addicted to wine, not pugnacious, not fond of sordid gain. Anything to do with pugs would be wrong, so it's wrong there. So he says it right here, see? But hospitable, loving what is good, sensible, just, devout, and self-controlled. Holding fast the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, that he may be able, an elder, to exhort in sound doctrine and to refute those who contradict. For there are many rebellious men, empty talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, especially the Jews. There was especially the Jewish people who stick by the law. For there are many rebellious men, empty talkers, deceivers, especially those of circumstances, who must be silenced because they are upsetting whole families, teaching things they should not teach for the sake of sordid gain. One of them, a prophet of their own, said, Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This testimony is true. Liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons. For this cause, reprove them severely, that they may be sound in faith, not paying attention to Jewish myths and commandments of men who turn away in the truth. Back in 2 Timothy, just across the last, 2 Timothy chapter 4, the end of it. This is Paul's charge to Timothy. He says, I solemnly charge you in the presence of God and of Jesus Christ, who is judge of living and the dead, and by his appearing in his religion, preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with great patience and instruction. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in according to their own desires, and will turn away their ears from truth, and will turn aside to myths. So, obviously, to reprove, to rebuke, is the necessity is to make a judgment on sound doctrine, maturity, what is speaking, what's being said, right? I mean, we tend to buy into also to this concept kind of tolerance ties into relativism. Well, you believe what you believe, I believe what I believe, right? And who am I to judge what you believe? What does the book say? What does the Bible say? The issue in judging, so the basis for wrong judging, okay, is really pride. And that's why he says, you know, in James he says, humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord and he will exalt you. Pride is that I think myself better than you. So why do we, that wrong judging is being critical or making a judgment about you based on, like he says, jealousy, bitterness, wanting to put myself above you, wanting to make myself look better, wanting to, any motive which is contrary to love. Okay? Reproof and correction is not wrong. But reproof and correction from a wrong, even truth, spoken from a hypocritical place. When you talk about Jesus, in chapter 7, talks about it in Luke 2, but in chapter 7 of Matthew, when he says, he goes on and he makes a pretty good explanation of it. When he says, look at the speck in your brother. He says, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye and do not notice the log that is in your own eye? To me, that's always been a pretty profound statement by Jesus, you know. I don't think Jesus was talking about, you know, the log in your eye, you know, doing it. I mean, they said log in your eye. Well, wait a minute. Any of you ever had a splinter in your eye? Or a piece of metal in your eye? If you have, it's teeny, right? And it blinds you. Right? Completely takes your vision out, your ability to see clearly. The littlest thing. We tend to think, well, log in your eye. Who's that weirdo? You know, I mean, that's something on those, that one of those medical TV shows or something where people have stuff stuck in them or whatever they are, you know. My daughter used to like to watch those, man. I don't know what the deal is, but weird stuff. Man, they come in, people are stupid, really stupid. But a log in your eye is something that, I mean, Jesus isn't being ridiculous, because who has a log in their eye and lives to talk about it? Or be critical of someone else, you know, doing it. I mean, but the issue is that when we are hypocritical, we're blinded because of our pride, because there is nothing that blinds us like pride. Nothing that makes us blind to our own issues, our own sin, like pride. Okay? And any reproof and correction we give from the baseline of pride is wrong. Okay? That's a pretty blanket statement, but it's wrong. Right? I think, regard myself as better than you, as more important than you, as more worthy than you, as not as bad as you, as all, I'm wrong. Any reproof and correction is hypocritical. And hypocritical, even if it's truth, if I do it from a point of hypocrisy, no, he doesn't say don't help your brother get the speck out of his eye, his own blindness, right? Because what you see is a speck in his eye is blinding him, right? Because again, a speck blinds you, right? A sliver in your eye. I've had wood slivers. I've had rocks usually don't impregnate, but back in the day, grinding, doing metalwork and stuff, man. Piece of metal in your eye. I've had that happen several times. It overwhelms you, man. You're just blind. You can't open your eye. You can't see. And doing it, you can't hardly see it. They're going, what's the matter? I can't see anything, you know? And it's the same thing in Jesus describing this. He does not say, don't help your brother get the speck out of his eye and help him with his blindness. That judgment of you're blind in this area is what love is, if you care. If you come from the point of, I care about you, just like your children, right? You don't, to not discern the hearts of your children and to correct them based on their heart is hatred towards your children, okay? To not discern the hearts of your brothers and sisters and help them and correct them is hatred. That's why he's saying, and it's not, you know, in verse 15 he says it too. What does he say? In verse 15 of chapter 7, Jesus again says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. False prophets that look like sheep. Well, you're judging somebody. You're not supposed to call somebody a false prophet or a false teaching. Yes, you are. He says to beware of them. You will know them by their fruits. You will make a judgment call based on the fruit of their life. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles are. But even so, every good tree bears good fruit. Rotten tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot produce bad fruit, nor a rotten tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown in the fire. So then, you will know them by their fruits. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. Boy, now that one doesn't go over well in our culture, right? Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. But he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Those aren't the fruit that he's talking about, that would define whether they know and are submissive to the true and living God or honor him as Lord or not. And I will say to them, and then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. There's tremendous deception in our culture. And if we care about people, we're going to come. We're not just going to go, yeah, you can believe whatever you believe. I don't care. You know, it's up. That's up to you. I mean, that is such hatred. But where is judging? You know, the judging that he's talking about, because he says, if we go back to James, he says he's talking about the law, God's law, right? He who speaks against his brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? Now, there's example after example of discerning right and wrong based on the truth of the Word of God. And the problem that James is dealing with, and the problem that we still deal with, and the problem that will always need to be dealt with, but James in particular, is he was dealing with Jews who became Christians. Okay? Now, the Jewish culture was, they had the law. And if you've not spent time reading through, you know, Leviticus and Deuteronomy, you should. There's a bunch of law in there, right? And a bunch of weird things, okay? Things that were figures of what would happen when Jesus coming and the temple and all the temple sacrifices and stuff. Those things were fulfilled in Jesus, but there's a lot of law there, okay? And we have the Big Ten Commandments, right? I keep threatening, okay, who's going to give me the Ten Commandments here? Come on. You know, you should know them. Because they're still real, and they're still what God's heart is. God set this law down, okay? So he had this law that he said, that you're not going to, the law is to show your need for a Savior. This is my heart. This is what I ask of you. This is what I expect of you. This is what righteousness looks like. This is what a right relationship with me will produce, and y'all fail. And you need Jesus. You need the sacrificial lamb. You need the blood sacrifice. And the law was there to show it. Didn't change how we felt about how we should act, how we should act towards each other, how we should treat each other, how we should respond to him. Doesn't change. Didn't change then. So they had the law, okay? But you know what they did? They created the Mishnah. Okay? And in Jesus' day, there was another 1,000 laws or so that the Jews wrote in order to make sure they kept the 10 and the rest of them that were there, right? And the Jews, the Pharisees, became more focused on the outward observance of the Mishnah and these laws than they did about God's heart for justice and truth. And regarding others as men, what did he say? What did Jesus say time and time? What's the greatest law? To love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And what's the second greatest? To love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said, within those two, you keep those two, boom. Kept them all. That is the law of God. That is the heart of God. And Jesus said, I'm going to give you a new commandment. Because you already have that one, okay? I'm following it. So I'm going to tell you, you love him as I have loved you and laid my life down for you. He redefined it on another level. Okay? Laid my life down for you. Regarded you as more important than myself. That's the law. If we keep those, we do it. And that's what this is talking about. Because what is wrong judgment? It's not regarding others more important than yourself. It's putting yourself above others and thinking that you're better than them. And saying things and criticizing things. You know, it's... We come up with all these lies. It's amazing to me. You know, smoking. You know. Most people, if in, you know,
We are a little different doing it. But if I walked outside and lit up a cigar or lit up a pipe after church and, you know, if I, depends on what's in it. No. Yeah, if we went to a pastor's conference, you know, and walked outside and said, you know, that you are forsaking God in doing this. Now, I understand that, you know, obviously modern medical research would say that it's not a good idea to be addicted to cigarettes and smoking because it's going to have a bad effect on your life, right? Not a good steward. And we would condemn. The greatest condemners of me at the pastor's conference where I lit up the cigar, we'd be a bunch of fat boys that would go into supper and would pile their plate up and go back for seconds again and then come back and get dessert and go, but you were smoking a cigarette. Is that God's law? No, it's man's law. Right? And yet we judge based on man's law. Okay? It wasn't long ago. Any of you heard of Spurgeon? Charles Spurgeon? Or Jonathan Edwards? Some men used mightily by God. Men of God, right? They smoked. Okay? Get over it. They smoked. Okay? Were they, oh no, they're going to hell? No. Were they doing anything wrong? No. Good for their bodies? No. Did they understand that? No. Okay. Were they doing anything wrong? No. But we would condemn them, right? We would judge them based on man's law. And that's where it comes down, you did this or you didn't say that. You know, here we are. We have bitterness or resentment in our heart towards people. Oh, that person's like this or that person's like this. And churches are full of that crap. You don't say it. But if I say, damn it, oh! You're going to hell. You're forsaking God. That word came out of your mouth. You're in trouble with God. You can't be right with God if you do that. As you sit there with bitterness in your heart, and that's exactly what he's talking about, hypocrisy. Now, if I'm a loving brother who cares and, you know, I would say as men, we're kind of in the process of this right now, trying to deal with it, right? A bunch of construction guys that haven't spent a lot of time learning what self-righteousness look like or fitting into the church culture and how it goes and haven't spent much time disciplining our tongues and have learned a whole language of communication that is the way we communicate in life, okay? It's just how you communicate, and it's how you communicate well and thoroughly and purposely on the job, okay? And we're, you know, so the difference is that if I care about my brothers and my brothers care about me, you don't stand from a prideful standpoint. That happens. There's those who say, I wouldn't say certain words if I had a mouthful of it. You know, right? I would never say that. I would never say those bad words. Why, you harbor resentment in your heart? You've got a log in your own eye that you can't even see straight? Or because you're prideful. Because prideful says, I wouldn't do that. I would never touch alcohol to my lips. You know, I would never, I mean, I could give you a whole list of them, right? There are things that the Bible doesn't say, right? They're not things that the Bible says are right and wrong. Is there a right and wrong? You know, I think in language. As brothers, we should go, do you realize that there's people that stumble when you use those words, David, that you don't necessarily need to make stumble? You're going to close doors just because of the way our hypocritical culture looks at it, right? You know, Christians say this, non-Christians don't say this. Christians don't smoke, cuss, and drink, right? They don't do those things. Yeah, I guess we're in trouble, right? So we have these standards of man-made laws that we tend to judge people on and stand in hypocrisy. Right? And he says, so what do you think you are, the lawmaker? There's only one lawmaker. Because in doing that, you're denying what God said as a law. You know what the law is? What God says the law is? Regard others as more important than yourself. So, the issue with judging is, where does it come from? Right? Does it come from a heart that says, I care about you? I don't want to see you deceived. All of us, on some level, are confused and deceived about who God is and what things are about, right? We all have misconceptions, misunderstandings, right? So, if I have misconceptions and misunderstanding and wrong view of God, is that a good thing? No, it's a really bad thing, isn't it? With potentially disastrous results, right? So for you to go, oh well, that's your opinion, that's your feeling about it, is that love? Or is that hatred? That's hatred. Because it's no different than cigarettes these days, right? If I happen to have been like this and missed the world and come out of the hill somewhere and, you know, I smoke a pack of cigarettes a day or two, right, doing it, and no big deal, I love Jesus, right? You're going to say, what would be the loving thing to me? Do you know there's been some research done that shows that's really bad for you? You know, and I care about you. And I really don't want you to destroy yourself, you know. Not self-righteously, but because you care, right? Not in judgment because I'm an evil heathen pagan. That's not God's law. Show me in the Bible where it says, do not smoke cigarettes. Okay? I haven't come across it yet. Okay? Don't think it's in there. So, is it a good thing to do? To judge on man's laws and to stand in judgment over people, which is what it's mostly about. Oh, you act like this. You dressed like that. You wore this thing. You did that. You know, we tend to have this judgmental. And just because you don't say it with your mouth doesn't make you better. Girls are terrible about it because you're raised your whole life to judge other girls. Compare yourself with them. Compete against them, right? How are you dressed? Where's that? Well, look at that. Doesn't even go together. Or we all think the greatest judgment would be, the greatest fearful thing that we would think is, oh, they wore that last week. How bad is that? Girls have this weird thing. I can't wear something twice in a row, man. Oh, man, they'll think I don't know. What would you think? What would be the problem? You like the shirt, you know? No way, man. You can't wear it twice in a row. No way. You know, that would be, you would, why? Because you'd be judged for such a thing, right? Yeah, I'll pass. Hey, don't you have anything new? What are you just, I don't know what you're thinking. You poor on the street? I mean, what kind of a judgment thing is that? But I'll go to spirit, okay? But I'll fear it. Oh, I wore this last week. So what? Look good, man. Still looks good, you know? Why are you worried about it? You know, on it, but no way, man. I wore it last week, man. I can't wear it. You know, doing it. I mean, you're raised in that. Girls are raised in that. And as a result, and you learn to be quiet about it, right? Because otherwise you get a B classification, right? And nobody wants that, right? I'm not that. So you learn to not say it, but in your mind you're going, whatever, you know. Look at her, you know. Judgmental towards it. Based on what? And coming from where? Because you care? Because you love that person? Because you regard them as more important than yourself? Or because you're prideful? And by the way, we tend to think, well, I'm not prideful, I'm insecure as heck. You know what insecurity is? Self-consumption. You know what self-consumption is? Pride. Right? So we tend to think, insecure, I'm humble. Because I'm really insecure, I'm humble. No! You're really self-consumed. And if you're really self-consumed, you are consumed with yourself. And if you're consumed with yourself, that's pride. We think, well, that's not how we describe it. We describe somebody as boastful, somebody as arrogant, somebody as audacious, somebody as out, you know. No. If you're consumed, if you're insecure and determined by your insecurity, you are determined by yourself and how people view you and what people think of you. And you regard yourself as more important than others. That's pride. Okay? Just we don't see it that way. Oh, no, they're humble. No, they're prideful. They're self-consumed in doing it. And that's wicked and that's evil. In any response out of that comes from pride, insecurity. I would contend that most girls would be, the first step you would take in motivation would be insecurity. How do I look? How do I look? What do I look like? What is this? Does this look okay? Does it not look okay? What's this thing? You know, just all the things that we would say would be insecurity on some level, okay? I happen to live with a wife who really isn't that way, and I'm blessed by it because it's one of the things we don't have to fight about being a wreck about. So she's not that concerned about it. But the truth is that we tend to think, well, I'm not prideful. In fact, I, you know, how will I look? How will I compete? You're taught to compete. You know, you're 6 years old and you're competing in the classroom for the attention of the boys. You know, who's going to be in daddy stinking rotten. Dads send their little girls out to find a husband at a young age. Send them out to dress and act and wiggle your butt and put the perfume, do whatever it takes to go attract the right one, okay? And you teach your kids to do that from day one. I'll buy you clothes to make you look the best and, you know, I'm fine with you. You know, go ahead and show your boobs a little bit and, you know, dress with tight jeans so they can look and go, oh, what a nice butt she has. Maybe that'll attract the right one, right? Because we want to attract that Mr. Right by him thinking sexual thoughts about you and doing this, and it's all going to go well, right? But we as dads are terrible, and we just curse the women in our culture. Curse them by sending them out and go, because not only do you stimulate attraction with a little brain, okay, from guys, which isn't the best one to be stimulating at that point until you're already married, and then it's good to stimulate that one, but before married, it's not good to stimulate that one, okay? Not only do you do that, but you know the worst part, in my opinion, is it keeps girls from being able to be friends. Is it keeps girls from being able to trust each other. From, you know, girls trust each other less than guys. I mean, it's a scary. Guys don't necessarily trust each other either, but you deal with it better, I think. You deal with it a little more directly, you know. You know, you say it, you know. You're whatever. And, I mean, guys are a lot more willing to be straight up. Girls, and it's one of the great blessings of my life to watch Tuesday night be, there is a majority of women there that are beginning to learn what being vulnerable and trusting each other with that is. And it's a super sweet thing because outside of that, you're never going to be healthy if you don't have that. Intimacy, having intimacy with fellow women, just like men. If men are unwilling to be intimate, unwilling to be vulnerable with each other, unwilling to trust each other, have people in life that trust, they're never going to be healthy. Most guys don't do it either. Don't know friendship. Again, it's back. And most women don't either. Most women never know that in their life. Okay? They have one woman that at least they don't compete with against in their life, you know, or something. You know, I don't know. You know, but a group of women that you can trust? It's not there. Why? Because of pride. And what does pride cause? Judgment, jealousy, bitterness in your heart. And if it's just in your heart and you've learned to socially deal with it and not express it outwardly, you know better. That's not any better. Because it will come out. Okay? It does come out. Maybe not directly with those words, but in your actions towards it, in your distance, in your keeping distance, in the hurt and destruction and devastation is huge on it. Because you're going against, you're setting up the law. You're judging somebody based on your standard, not on God's standard. And the law that we follow is the law of love. To regard others as more important than ourselves. And if I care about somebody, again, my expression, most of you all have heard it, you know. If you've got somebody who picks up a glass on the counter and looks like water and they start to drink it and you know, you just put Drano in there to pour it on the sink and hadn't done it yet. Right? Right? They're about to drink Drano, which is false teaching, right? False truth about God. It kills you, okay? It's going to kill you. It's going to eternally kill you. Way worse than Drano, right? So somebody's drinking, about to drink that thing at Drano. What's love? Oh, well, who are we to judge? You know? Who am I to judge there, you know? That's, if they want to, you know, if they don't know, but, you know, it wouldn't be nice. It wouldn't be nice to do the only way to keep them from drinking that Drano at the moment is do what? Slap it out of their hands. Because they're like this, like they're scream, yell. Right? Because you love them or because you hate them? I mean, if somebody you really don't like, you might go, oh, I didn't see what they're going to drink there, man. Good. Cheers. Right? But if you love them, you're going to respond. And you're going to respond violently out of love. And the truth is that false doctrine, that false understanding, just like he says, there's false teachers. It's not okay to just be quiet. You say, well, yeah, but you can point out the thing, but you don't name names because that's going, oh, really? Paul named a bunch of names. Okay? Great, straight up. Okay? Called them out by name. That had left him, that were teaching false doctrine, that had fallen away. Okay? Why? Because he cared about the rest of the people. Do we care? Okay? If I know, if somebody says, well, we're thinking of going to this church, you meet them on the street or whatever, and, you know, we're thinking of going to this church. Okay? If I know that church is teaching false doctrine, okay? If I know what they're teaching about God is false doctrine. What am I saying? Oh, who are you to judge, David? Who are you to judge what they teach? Who are you to judge what they say? Oh, well, go to. Is that drinking Drano? Or is it a loving thing to go, I care about it. Now, am I selflessly motivated? Like, well, you hurt my feelings. Why wouldn't you want to go hear me teach? Why wouldn't you want to be in our church that is the best church? Why wouldn't you want to be part of this? You know, oh, well, you shouldn't go do that. Because those guys are bad. I badmouth them in order to make ourselves look good, right? Say bad things about them and think, well, those guys, well, they're, you know, because we do it in Christianese ways. Oh, you know, they're I think they're brothers, you know, do it, but, you know, they got this, you know, things about this, not, you know, doing it. If I do that out of selfish ambition, right? Out of hurt, out of pride getting hurt, out of jealousy, out of whatever, that is wrong. And wrong for me to open my mouth and even say anything. But if I love somebody and care about him, not selfishly, but I regard them as more important than myself, to say something about it is correct. That's what he says, to reprove, to correct in doctrine and in truth, by God's laws, by God's standard. Not by my judgment, you know. I don't like flip-flops. I think they're stupid, you know. And they're the dumbest shoe invented. I mean, fine, you want to go in the, I don't know what, in the shower or something, in the beach because you don't want sand in your shoes or something. Okay, fine, okay. And you all know, you know, how I feel about flip-flops. Should I judge somebody and say, you're an idiot for wearing, well, maybe. Maybe. It depends, you know. If we're up in the hills and you've got flip-flops on, I might say you're an idiot, you know, in doing it, okay? But for me to condemn somebody because they dress a way or some different way than I like, I don't see much negative said about it. In fact, people with most hippie-type, Calvary Chapel types would justify Jesus wore sandals, right? You know, come on. I mean, come on. Sandals and ponytails and Hawaiian shirts, right? That's what it's about, right? I mean, that's a valid thing. Should I judge somebody based on what? No. I'm not to condemn somebody because of something I don't like is wrong. Okay? To speak truth, God says to speak truth. He says to judge if somebody, I mean, again, it couldn't be more straight up. Do not judge. But if somebody's a dog, or if swine, do not throw your pearls before them or give what is holy. That is about the strongest judgment you could make towards somebody. So obviously, he didn't mean do not discern their doctrine, do not discern the fruit of their life. I personally, you know, in most of you know this, you know, I personally think one of the great deceptions in our life is we lie to people and say, well, if you said the prayer, and then if you were really, if you were baptized, and maybe even if you did communion, now you're in, man. Who am I to say? And yet your life is living in complete rebellion to God, okay? To me, one of the great deceptions is, oh, no, you're a brother. You're just carnal doing it. You were lied to. And you were deceived. And for me to be quiet is to go, oh, well, go ahead and go to hell on your own path. I don't care. Right? Because your fruit doesn't matter. You don't have fruit in your life that's evidence of the Spirit of God living in you. Now, you know, you don't often hear me say you're going to hell. But you will hear me say often in our culture, well, I don't know. Your salvation is certainly in question on whatever level. You know, born again, saved. You know, I also have a complete different view than most of culture. And I'm here to listen. But I believe that the process is completely skewed. Jesus commanded us to go make disciples, followers of Jesus. Right? That's what a disciple is. A follower. Right? We're told to go make disciples. Right? That's true. The truth is that Jesus said he had 5,000 disciples at times. Right? Following him around. Disciples. What do you say? You know, unless you're willing to eat my body and drink my blood, you have no part in me. Were those people born again? No. Were they saved? No. They were followers of Jesus. And the truth is, I think it's an absurd, irreconcilable dichotomy to say, surrender the entirety and totality of your life to somebody you don't know. Trust me on this one. That's a ridiculous statement. To expect somebody to surrender the entirety and totality of their life and put their all their trust in someone that they don't know. The important thing is to get to know who Jesus is. What he calls us to. What he was about. What he really said. Not what the church says. Not what dogma says. Not what religion says. But what did Jesus, who is Jesus? To make followers of Jesus, the true and living God. To see who is he trustworthy? Has he proven himself trustworthy? Is he worthy of my absolute, complete surrender of my life? Of dying to myself, living for him? Now you've got a real choice to make. Once you come to know that. Once you come to understand that. Then the lie and the thing that we don't. Judging. You know, none of us are perfect. Are you perfect? Well, no, I'm not. And those of you who know me know that to be true. I don't need to. Anybody here know I'm not perfect? You all know I'm not perfect, okay? I'm doing it. I don't claim to be perfect. I don't think I'm perfect on doing it. But I also care enough about you that I don't want you to be deceived. The world is full of ravenous wolves in sheep's clothing. That's what it says. Beware of wolves in sheep's clothing. You look like sheep. You're really nice. You know, kind of soft and woolly. You seem pretty innocent and pretty harmless. That's what you look like. But they're ravenous wolves that destroy. If I care as a shepherd, if I care as a leader, if I care as an elder, I'm going to speak. I'm going to speak. And obviously, it has been, and I apologize for it, and I ask God to cleanse me from it. It cannot be with hypocrisy. Okay? It cannot be I judge you for something while I overlook my own log in my eye. That I hold you to a standard that I don't hold myself to. Because that's what religion is. You know, it's always amazing to me to watch the standard of... It's amazing to me to watch a response about men who are shepherds and really high up within the ranks of Christianity and highly esteemed as teachers and leaders doing that. And all of a sudden, how did this happen? They ended up having an affair and falling away. Being in utter rebellion. No. They were hypocrites. And have been hypocrites. And have refused to take the log out of their own eye. And as a result, they were blinded. And they weren't able to help the people within their church. Their sheep within their church. That didn't happen. It's just that they were hypocrites. And where were the elders? My relentless answer is, where were the elders? Because there were signs. There was fruit. There was evidence. Nobody cared enough. Don't judge. Who are we to judge? You know? It's one of the reasons why most pastors hold themselves pretty aloof. Right? Hold themselves pretty distant on doing it, right? So you can't really get in here and judge. And you hold yourself aloof. And nobody's going to quite, you know, nobody's going to say, hey, David, how about this? I tell you what, man. You stink and be about it. Hey, David, how about this? Or what is in my life? Okay? If you care, if you don't, if not, you hate me. And if you hate me, just call it what it is. If you care, if you love me, you're going to watch my life and care about my life. And care about me being sincerely deceived or insincerely deceived or acting in any way which is hypocritical and contrary to God's law. Okay? And if you care about me, you're going to go, again, it doesn't mean you're looking for ways to be critical or knock me down. I mean, that happens too, right? Why? Bitter jealousy, envy. Now that judgment isn't going to go so well, right? Because, well, if you fall, then that'll make me feel better about my life. And, see, you're not so good either. I mean, you said something to me, you know, that bothered me. You criticized my life and said something. Well, I'm going to find something to criticize you. Who do you think you are? It's not about me. It's about the truth of God. And the law of God is to love. When I regard you as more important than myself, and you guys are not, you guys are all charged, okay, with loving each other. And loving each other means in the fight against the enemy, keeping a watchful eye on each other's lives, helping each other in the process of sanctification. Doesn't mean you walk around being critical, because if you're walking around being critical, you're coming from selfish ambition. Right? If your motives are envy or jealousy or, you know, I can't believe she wore the same thing twice or, you know, whatever. Look at those shoes. They look so stupid or whatever it might be. Right? That is not coming from my place. And those seem benign and innocent. Okay? But it goes to the same place about character judgment. And we tend to want to, because you're so competitive. Girls, you're terrible about this. You're so competitive. You want to knock somebody down to make yourself feel better. I just put this one down and make myself feel better. Now let's do it in ways that don't make me look like a bee. You know, let me just do it in ways that seem sweet. God, I just want to share this with you so we could pray about it. You know. It's one of the most evil things typically happens, right? Just want to share this with you so we can pray about it. Well, if I don't already know about it, you know, and is it really true? And do you mind if I quote you on this? Okay? If it comes out to be, well, no, but see, I did. I just wanted to spread this thing and kind of bring them down a notch or two so that, you know, see, I'm the holy one. It's a sick, sick world and very subtle that we need to be careful of. From that point, judgment is absolutely wrong. From the point of, I love you, I care about you, and I see this in your life, and I care about that. The Bible's really clear about it. You go to a brother, right? Or you go to a sister, and you say, hey, this looks this seems inconsistent, right? You know, this doesn't seem right. Are you okay here, or do you understand this? How does that process work? It's called church discipline. We don't do it because why? You don't judge. Because in order to exercise church discipline, you need to judge, right? So you go to the brother, and they say, you know what? Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. Kiss my ass. Okay? What's the Bible say to do? Take another brother with you. Take another brother with you, or get another brother involved. Go, hey, you know, this isn't just David doesn't like you or think you're wants to make you look bad or put you down doing it. This is because he loves you and he cares about you, and this is what the Word of God says and doing. And they're going, yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it, man. I'm really thankful that you guys hold me accountable. Just when Bible say to do then. Take him in front of the church. You know, put it out there. Go, hey, do you realize this person is living in rebellion? Why? That's judgmental. You hurt their feelings. They're going to leave. They're not going to come back. Well, God says, call out sin so that others do not. It's, you know, that's not very nice. Well, it didn't tell me to be nice. It tells me to love them and to not let them see, to live in rebellion. Without a fight. Without a fight. So, do not judge. Interpret that according to the Bible. And there's 30, 40 verses that I went through this week that I'd... But it's there. What I'm talking about is there. And go after it. Time and time again, it talks about proper discerning of right and wrong, of truth. And improper, self-righteous, jealousy, bitterness, envy, judgment. Okay? And there's, one's absolutely diabolically wrong and destructive. One's absolutely absolutely essentially right for the health of a family. For the health of intimacy. So, struggle with it. What does it look like? Where do I come from? What are my inner motives? Because that's, as always, that's the question, right? Where's my motive? Where's my heart in this? Because that's what God cares about. And that's what he looks at. And that's what he judges. I don't care how good you've become on the outside, you know. Most churches are full of women who are really good at it, okay? Good at maintaining their perception of righteousness and their perception of godliness, and yet, I mean, I know it's not my wife. I'm not speaking of her. Well, yeah, it was for a period of time, but not anymore. So, grew up with it. So, let's pray. God, the enemy has been very good at causing us to walk around with our guards up and be protective and be defensive because we can't trust because people are not trustworthy. Because they stand in judgment in order to self-exalt, in order to make themselves look better, in order to protect, in order to do all kinds of things that come from a wrong motive. You say you ask... We ask and do not receive because you ask to spend it on your own pleasures. That isn't just talking about money or something. It's talking about all of life. When we selfishly go to you and ask for comfort, ask for friendship, ask for intimacy, ask for... God, I please cause us to check. We are to be judged by our fruits. We are judged by our fruit. You judge us, and we are to judge by fruit. We're to love, and we're to respond with compassion and grace and mercy and long-suffering and patience and kindness and gentleness and meekness and self-control. Without that, sometimes slapping the cup of Drano out of your hand doesn't look like it has any of those characteristics. Certainly doesn't feel like it if we're holding the cup of Drano. But God, I would ask you to learn correct family dynamics as we try to teach our own families and as we try to live it out in this family you call us to. You call us to intimacy. We don't have intimacy without vulnerability. We don't have intimacy without regarding others as more important than ourselves. We want the good side of it. We want the security of people loving us, caring about us so much and doing it, and yet we don't want to do the work. God causes us to realize what the proper work is, what the right thing to do is. It's not self-exalting. It's not putting others down. I mean, we would look at that and mock. You make fun of somebody else in the school playground so that you make yourself look better. You make fun of somebody because you want to be above them, and yet we grow up and still try to do those things. Still live by those codes. It's not your code. Your law is to regard others as more important than ourselves, to love. So God causes us to understand how to eliminate the quarrels and conflicts and issues between us by responding in love. Causes us to be willing to go down that road, because that's the only road to a right relationship with you. And that's, I think, what we all want. Thank you, Jesus, that, as James said, He gives a greater grace. The grace that You give us, the unmerited favor towards us that gives us the ability to have power over sin, gives us the ability to be selfless in our pursuit of You, because to recognize who You are causes us to be pretty well diminished. God, don't let us take this as a Sunday thing or a Tuesday thing or a Thursday thing. Cause us to realize this is about life every day, and to be check, to hold ourselves in check. Please, God, I would ask You to hold us in check, that what is not true would be exposed, what is real in our intimacy with You would bless us, because I know that's the case. Again, I thank You for being a good God, a caring God, and a merciful God, and not striking me dead in my hypocrisy and my sin, and continuing to push forward to sanctify. And I thank You for that. Amen.